You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ramil, the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to follow the show if you haven't already, wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCK15, and you'll get 15% off your next order. Today's show is also being hosted on Locker Room. It's a first for me, like I mentioned before, so I hope I don't bungle this too much. Never used it before today, but send in any questions you might have so we can talk about the Miami Heat, Bam Adebayo's Defensive Player of the Year campaign. And I wanted to get started with some comments that Jimmy Butler made in yesterday's postgame presser. I know a lot of people are pretty excited about his comments. Or actually, I've seen people take it kind of the wrong way as far as him indicating that he was going to be able to guide the team to a playoff victory or to help push them. Kind of phrased it a little strangely in that he was kind of indicating as long as we get to the playoffs as a team, then that would be enough to carry us. Once he's there, he'll be able to carry the team to move forward. So I know that kind of rubs people the wrong way because it sounds like I'm not sure of exactly how to phrase it, but it's kind of like he's putting himself above everybody else. At least this is what I've seen. This isn't my feeling on the subject. I feel like Jimmy's absolutely right. And I've made this point before, is that he is the great X factor here in the sense that once Miami is able to get to the playoffs, Jimmy has proven, especially last season in the playoffs, that he can push this team beyond what they're capable of as a whole, you know, some of their parts. He's individually such a great basketball player. Again, a top 10, top 15 player, that he is a difference maker, able to sway the outcome of every individual game and, of course, a total series. And so I think that's what he's implying. And I don't think it's necessarily something that could be misinterpreted in any sort of negative way. It's kind of funny to think that, you know, a player verbalizing what everybody expects of them. You know, they have to be, somehow players are expected to toe the line between somewhat humble and then also being aggressive enough and arrogant enough to be willing to be that aggressive. And so it's kind of always an interesting mix there on how people will interpret it, because I guess it kind of comes across as a little brash. But to be honest with you, I feel like this is exactly what Jimmy should be saying. Like, he is absolutely right. I really think that he's just that good a player. And I really think that he's capable of carrying that team that way. We saw that last season. We saw his performance against the Lakers. And I think he's able to change a game, change a series completely, and just dominate that way. And he is that good. And I think, look, that kind of inspires everybody else. I remember when I talked to Kelly Olynyk earlier this season, Kelly, of course, no longer with the team, but I remember asking him about, you know, Jimmy talking about, you know, kind of just putting it in people's minds throughout the course of the season that they were going to be able to make the finals and win a championship. And it's just this kind of subliminal messaging that just kind of inspires this team. Like, they need to be able to believe. We see this with Bam. We see this with other players. Like, that confidence level needs to be carried on and it needs to be inflated every once in a while. You need to have that sense that you can accomplish these things. And I think Jimmy putting that out there is a strong indicator to the rest of the team that as long as they continue to play well, he'll be able to help get them over the hump and help push them to a playoff victory. And I think that I absolutely still think that this is a team capable of not just advancing to the NBA Finals, but winning the Finals. I saw it last year against the Lakers too. Like, the argument has been made before by me, but by others too. Like, I think while the Lakers had the top two players in Anthony Davis and LeBron James, as far as the series is concerned, Jimmy, Bam, even Goran before his injury, of course, were all capable of having individually great games where they still would have been somewhere among those top two, top three players in the series. And that's something to take into consideration, because I think, like, you look at the roster as a whole, you look at Jimmy Butler's individual performances, you look at what Bam could have been capable of. You know, he was certainly capable of that against the Boston Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals. We saw what Goran had done throughout the whole playoffs as the team's leading scorer. All those factors individually able to contribute to a high level of victory there. And I think they would have been able to just knock off any opponent. I really do think that. And I think that was the case this year. Although I'm not sure what to expect with Goran moving forward. He's had a bit of a resurgence, but I just don't know how consistent he's able to do it over the course of an extended, you know, playoff series. So it's going to be a huge concern. I hope he continues to get rest because he has looked pretty solid over the last couple of days. But overall, I just want him to be able to get healthy and still be able to contribute at a high level. So I'm not seeing a lot of feedback here, but hopefully everything's worked out. Hopefully you guys are all appreciating this episode of Locked On Heat. Again, it's a first for me, so I appreciate you joining in and asking whatever questions you have. If you have comments, suggestions, anything, I'd love to hear it. If you want to ask a question, you'll be recorded as well, so I appreciate that. For now, no questions have come in, but I guess to the overall topic of discussion here, which is why I labeled this, the show. Let's see. Jade, hello. You write in, I don't think we can rely on Goran's recent streak. Yeah, you're right. Look, I think that's a valid point. I think when you look at what Goran is capable of doing, I don't know that he's ever been, the strength of his game has never been one that's built on athleticism necessarily, but I think he's always been quick enough and used that combination of the iron shoulder and whatever speed and quickness he did have to be able to get to the rim. That's no longer a part of his game, and I don't think that we can trust him being a consistently good outside shooter. The mid-range game is still going to be there on occasion, but overall, I'm just not sure that, you know, he's going to be the kind of player that he once was, or that he was in even the playoffs last year. And so if that's the case, that's a concern, I think. It also depends, of course, on whether or not Victor Oladipo is healthy and available. Now, I don't know if the trio of Oladipo, Goran, and Nunn, if, again, assuming Oladipo is available for the playoffs, if that's enough to help push Miami and provide enough complementary scoring. You know, of course, you also have to count on whatever Tyler Hero can do. I wonder, I'm trying to get a sense for, you know, what happened yesterday. Obviously, Hero had a big game. He had that big fourth quarter with 14 points. And I haven't really been able to see Twitter, but I'm wondering, do people feel encouraged by Tyler's performance? Is he quote-unquote back? Is it an aberration? I'm just curious how you all feel about it, because to me, it was just a one-game performance. I don't know whether or not you can really count on Tyler being that consistently good moving forward. To me, he's going to be streaky at times. He's going to have some moments here and there. I'd like for him to be able to be a little bit more confident and have some of that swag back, and at least have it be a little bit more obvious to the rest of us, because as we're watching him play, at least over the last few weeks, it really did seem like he was a little timid, a little shaky, and not necessarily quite the player he had been last season. So before I even talk about why Bam may or may not be a legitimate Defensive Player of the Year and MVP candidate, I want to talk to you a little bit about Built Bar. You know, I've mentioned it before, it's the best tasting protein bar ever. Make sure you go out there and grab yourself a box of Built Bars if you want to try a delicious snack that you don't feel guilty about having, because it's so good for you. You don't even know you're eating a protein bar, but it's got all the nutrients you're looking for. It's also low in calories, low in sugar, low in everything that you possibly don't want to take in, but it's also high in taste. And if you go right now to BuiltBar.com, use a promo code LOCKED15, you get 15% off your next order. And you can build your own box of delicious flavors. They have so many to choose from. I'm sure you'll find ones that you love, just as I have and just as my family have. Don't forget, use that promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. The Locked On Podcast Network is covering the NFL draft from all angles. Catch up on the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 podcast presented by Odyssey. Follow Locked On NFL Draft and the Draft Dudes podcast for the latest draft news. And stay tuned for more info about our live NFL draft coverage. How much is Duncan worth to the team, Stan? I don't know. That's a huge question. Look, I think we're all hearing reports so that he's going to look for the bag, similar to what Joe Harris got in Brooklyn. And that's a huge amount of money there. And I kind of am the feeling that, similarly to what we've seen with Wayne Ellington in Miami, like, you can perform above your career level in Miami because they find a way to maximize your talent and find a way to bring out the very best of your skill set. Like, if Duncan had joined the Lakers, as was reported by, I want to say, Ramona Shelburne, that he was actually, training with them, and he could have been selected by them, or at least added as an undrafted free agent, and then he wound up not joining that team. Playing alongside LeBron, playing alongside that roster, maybe it would have been a little different. Although I wonder now, I can't actually recall if Duncan's rookie season was before LeBron joined the Lakers, or maybe it was that first year where he was hurt most of the time. But either way, look, I still am a very firm believer that players need to be on teams with the right fit to help them achieve whatever they can. Like I mentioned at this point in yesterday's podcast, I really think that KZ Okpala has all the tools as a player that he's just not going to be able to achieve what we expect him to in Miami. It's going to take him being able to go somewhere else. To me, he just doesn't seem like he is able to find his footing here, because Eric Spoelstra is a noted taskmaster who expects players to just continuously work at practice levels and just be able to put in all the work. We've heard him say it a million times. He puts in the work behind the scenes. And even with, you know, the recent reporting regarding Tyler Herro and his off-the-court interests, this is an organization that takes a great deal of pride in having players be focused 100% on basketball, which is absolutely unrealistic and ridiculous to me. Because, and I think this is the overall point here when it comes to Tyler and his off-the-court interests or anything like that, like Jimmy Butler is off with, I can't even remember the actress's name, you know, off on a boat somewhere in Spain or Europe or something like that. And he's recording his Michelob Ultra commercials and he's doing all his off-the-court stuff with Mark Wahlberg. Does anybody question it? Absolutely not. Why? Because it's Jimmy Butler and because he can do anything he wants to out on the floor. But when it comes to Tyler Herro and him struggling on the court, then maybe you start to question whether or not the Chipotle bowl and the Tyler cereal and all that is a little bit too much, and maybe he needs to focus a little bit more on basketball. I think it's overstated. I said that recently on the podcast. I don't think it's fair to put Tyler and to mention that the team has some concerns about the off-the-court issues out there, because I think he was just slumping. I think he's also 21 years old, and he should be able to explore his life outside of basketball to continue to build his brand and see what he brings to the table. So to me, I'm not sure exactly why the point was made. But to get back to your question about Duncan's overall worth, I think he's still not going to be able to command that much out in the market. Like I don't know that other teams view him as being that kind of long-term piece. Like this isn't like, say, I know the comparison is probably unfair. This isn't Klay Thompson, who is so good as a defender that he brings, you know, value to on both sides of the ball. Duncan, while he's certainly improving as a defender, he's also a little bit older. You get the feeling that maybe he's reached, if not his peak, this is probably the best version of him that we'll be able to see on a consistent basis. And if that's the case, then I just don't know that a lot of teams are going to want to invest a lot of money in a 26, 27-year-old project by the time they sign him there. So I think Miami will probably offer him somewhere about $18 million a year. I think on the open market, he'd probably command a little bit less than that. And I think, you know, maybe some team is willing to say he could be our $20 million player. But, let's try and separate yourselves from Heat fandom for a bit there and think about whether or not if Duncan was a free agent, let's say before we had seen him, we had only seen him from afar, the same way that you watch, I don't know, let's say Joe Harris, for example. And then all of a sudden, Miami signs Duncan Robinson at 27 years old for $20 million a year. I don't think you'd be happy with that. Like, yes, you'd say, well, this is a career 40% shooter from three-point range. Yeah, he moves off the ball a lot. But what else does he do, right? Well, I mean, does he get to the rim enough where he makes it a great value as a contract? Would you want to continue to pay him that kind of money? And it's similar to what we've seen, you know, even internally with Tyler Johnson, a guy who can provide some value, not the same level of Duncan, obviously, but when you look up that balloon payment at the last 2 years of his contract, you know, it was difficult to accept Tyler for the kind of player he was. And imagine if you had to structure something similarly to that with Duncan, where it was ascending contract levels throughout the course of his contract, where maybe they start off the first year paying him $15 million, and by the end of that deal, let's say a 4 or 5 year deal, maybe it's about $25 million. Would you want to pay Duncan $25 million in 4 or 5 years from now? Probably not. At least that's my thought overall. I just can't see him. Yeah, I mean, $20 million seems fair, right? I guess that seems, well, maybe not fair. That might not be the right word. I think $20 million seems about the appropriate level of value for an NBA player of his considerable skill. It seems a little bit on the high end. And I think that when you make the argument about state income tax and things of that sort, you could probably say, look, $20 million elsewhere is equivalent to $17 to $18 million here. So, you know, we'll offer you $18 million. Plus, we've seen this in the past. Andy Ellisberg, if nothing else, is a genius at being able to achieve these, or include these kind of bonuses that are not considered against the salary cap, but that the players will likely achieve through some kind of machinations there. We've seen it with Kelly and his playing time and everything else like that. So I wonder if they can include something like if Duncan plays in all, let's say, 75 to 80 games, he gets an extra $1 million. Or if he, hits a number of three-pointers, or if he makes an all-star team, or if he makes, if he wins the three-point shootout contest, maybe that's when you start to say, okay, maybe he gets an extra $1 million here and there, where the total value of the contract per year is probably a little bit more than even the signed $17 to $18 million per year. I think you want to still keep flexibility. I like the idea of keeping him for the next 4 years, which is a far cry from where we all were about a month and a half ago before the trade deadline, when we were all saying, you know what, maybe Duncan is struggling. Maybe there's not a place for him here. Maybe it's a good idea to trade him for a Kyle Lowry or somebody else along those lines. So, it's just always interesting to me how the pendulum switches from side to side, how it rotates regarding a player and whether or not you see him as a fundamental piece or a piece that you can, build on or continue to add to this team. It's interesting to me. But I guess we should probably get to the overall topic of conversation here, something I did want to ask about, Bam Adebayo and his candidacy there. I get it. Struggling is not, that's not exactly a struggle. It's also, not to the same level that you expect him to be. If I had to say, I think that Duncan's career arc is probably going to be closer to, the 40% line. I don't see his shooting taking any kind of significant dip. He's going to have ebbs and flows over the course of an 82-game season. That's just the norm. But I think overall, he's probably going to hover close to 40-ish percent for the rest of his career. Why? Because he continues to work at it. And I don't see that kind of skill devolving to any point. Like, maybe if he, if he suffers kind of injuries and things of that sort, he continues to run miles and miles per game, maybe eventually it'll take its toll on him, which is something to consider when you're also looking at the potential, contract value and things of that sort. But to me, I think he still provides such an incredible value there. And I think that he's not going to lose the skill of shooting and curling off of screens and doing what he does so effectively, better than anybody else, to be honest with you. I think he's probably, certainly in the conversation, as a top five shooter in the league and maybe arguably the best shooter in the league right now. Steph is different. Steph is very unusual, so it's not quite the same thing. Pound per pound, I wonder if, in a shooting contest, whether or not Duncan might be able to hold his own with them. I'd like to think so. Although I've seen practice sessions between Duncan and Kelly Olynyk, and let me tell you, Olynyk can probably hold his own against Duncan too, which is pretty, pretty funny considering, that the ebbs and flows of Kelly's game. There were moments there where he was incapable of hitting a three-point shot, and then of course you get to Kelly Bird, where he's able to hit 5 three-pointers in a game or something like that. But as far as Bam's case for MVP, it was kind of just an interesting topic because I want to say it was Nekias Duncan and having Mark Jones in the recent podcast saying that that Bam is capable of winning the MVP. And I think I personally, I know all of you are already saying that he's capable of capable of winning the MVP. I feel like obviously you're probably, you're probably a little bit skewed based on your fandom. I just don't necessarily think that he's going to be that kind of player. It's funny considering, that Nikola Jokic was somewhere along those same lines there. I think even now, Denver Nugget fans would argue that Jokic is probably, too timid, not capable or not willing to be as aggressive with his shooting as he should be. Considering the kind of recent barrage that we saw from Jokic and where he's taken over the offensive slack so well, with the absence of Murray, I feel like this is the frustration for Nuggets fans, is that they see this player who's capable of putting up 40 plus points per game and then just doesn't always do it because he's a playmaker first and foremost. And I think this is a lot like what Heat fans are experiencing now with Bam. And the fact that he has those aggressive moments on occasion, of course, everybody likes to refer back to that Brooklyn Nets set from a couple of months ago where he was so good and everybody thought he was going to turn a corner, and then predictably he did not. And so now you're continue to hold him to that standard, which, has not been the norm throughout his career. And I don't see him taking that leap. Not yet. I have to see something much more consistent. And maybe that's the whole thing, too, is that we're looking at a player in his fourth year, still only 23 years old. That's unbelievable. You compare him to other players, like even a Giannis or something like that, and he's already taken such a huge leap in his production and his level of play. He's just such a complete all-around player. a little bit different than I think even a guy like Jokic because of his overall defensive acumen. So to me, I don't know. I think that Bam needs to be much more willing to take that shot. And I don't think it's going to happen based on the current configuration of this team and how it's built. He's just not expected to be that player. And he needs to be the guy who gets everybody else going. He needs to be the playmaker. He needs to be the offensive hub that initiates actions for everybody else. Because, well, I mean, if you want to maximize what Duncan can do, you need Duncan to, you need Bam to take a step back and initiate offense. You need him to work that pick and roll, work those dribble handoffs, etc. And so that takes away from the aggression that everybody wants to see from him, where he's willing to take those shots. So, you know, I kind of did some searching there with the numbers between him and Giannis. And look, this is in Giannis's fourth year. They were not as a good a team as Miami currently is. They were a first-round exit, six games. I can't recall now. I want to say the Toronto Raptors, but I'm not quite sure there in the first round. But either way, there was a team coached by Jason Kidd. That seems like an eternity ago. Also with Chris Middleton, not quite at the level of play that he is nowadays. Their second-best player was Jabari Parker. Remember those days? I think Giannis was expected to do more, but even when you look at the numbers there, he was getting to the line a lot more than Bam currently is this season. And I think that's part of the problem too, is that, you know, Bam is not necessarily looking to take looking to get to the free throw line as often or as easily as he can. He's shooting a lot better, overall than Giannis was, 80% to 77% for Giannis in that fourth season there. But, you know, only six attempts per game, less than 5.7, actually, to 7.7 from Giannis. This was even Giannis from a couple of years ago, before he was starting to get into that MVP consideration. Giannis was expected to take up much more of a scoring load. The total rebounding numbers were pretty comparable. The assist numbers were pretty comparable. So it's not like Bam, the playmaker, is doing so much more now than what Giannis was doing in his fourth year. And I know it's not an exact even, apples-to-apples type comparison. But to me, I feel like Giannis was being utilized as much more of a central hub on a team where he was expected to carry the load much more singularly than Bam is on this team. As long as Jimmy's on this roster, he's going to be the person who takes those shots. He's going to be the one to create a lot of the offense to get to the line. You wonder maybe if Bam's best chances of reaching an MVP level of production is once Jimmy's contract is done, whether or not, you know, he's willing to either go elsewhere or take somewhat of a back seat. For Heat fans, not quite to the level of LeBron talking to D Wade and telling Dwayne that he has to take a back seat, or Dwayne at least, you know, publicly admitting that he's going to take a back seat and letting LeBron control the offense. Look, Jimmy, to his credit, has said all along that he thinks Bam is the team's best player. Now, while that is just that, you know, the same kind of building confidence and getting your player to reach another level of production, I don't know. Like, to me, it's Jimmy is just, I think he says these things knowing that it inspires his teammates. But at the same time, I also think that he has such an incredible will, confidence, arrogance, if you will. Make sure you go over to BetOnline because it's the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, NHL, and Major League Baseball are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards and TV shows, reality TV, real-time updated odds and props, and almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. So head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON. The Ultimate Mock Draft 2021, presented by Locked On and Odyssey, is happening now, featuring analysis from NFL experts Michael Irvin, Jason LaConfora, and Brian Ballinger, our local experts for every team are making trades, picking the next stars of their team. So search the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 on the new Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Odyssey is your new audio home for all the sports, podcasts, music, and news that matters to you. That's AUDACY, Odyssey.
No, I agree that nobody really thought, you know, Jimmy was capable of this. Like, I think, you know, if you look at the player he was in Chicago, and that's part of the reason why, you know, Chicago fans, you know, love Jimmy, is that he built himself to be this player. But, you know, he was much more of a complementary role player. He was a guy who was getting a lot of minutes based on his defense. you know, proving to Tom Thibodeau that he deserved to be out on the floor, and you know, he slowly worked himself to that level where he could be that kind of player. But then that also, you know, some of his teammates didn't quite appreciate that his ego was growing commensurate with his level of skill and his production on the floor. You know, this was, I think Derrick Rose was still a beloved teammate by guys like Luol Deng and Joakim Noah and stuff like that. To see Jimmy kind of take the torch, not necessarily have the torch handed to him, because remember, Derrick, because of his injury issues, wasn't really willing to relinquish the torch, but he kind of had no choice. He just wasn't the same kind of level of player. Joakim Noah, much more of a complimentary guy, never really expecting or wanting to be the primary focus of your you know, your offense or anything like that. He was just much more of a defensive minded player, a playmaker, and a guy who could score on occasion. But Jimmy just said, you know what, fuck it, I'll take over, and you're not good enough to do it anymore, just give me the damn ball. And he certainly responded. So I look, it's an interesting thing. Maybe he expects something similarly from Bam. I would not say that. I think right now he's much more comfortable being the lead player, and then having Bam be more of a 1B kind of guy, even if he talks him up otherwise in the media. But it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out in the future. Like, I think moreover than the potential MVP type year or production from Bam, I think it's worth talking about the Defensive Player of the Year campaign. We all saw the team tweet out that, you know, Bam is a Defensive Player of the Year candidate, at least in their view. I don't have the numbers in front of me, unfortunately, but I can tell you that there's no chance he's going to win Defensive Player of the Year. Like, there's not enough production left. There's not enough games left for him to sway everybody's opinion on the subject. Like, right now, he's just not going to be able to do enough. I think Rudy Gobert is going to probably win it. You could probably make a case for Bam Adebayo. I'm sorry, for Ben Simmons. But I think it's more than likely it's going to be Gobert again. And it's funny because I was just kind of trying to do a deeper dive on the history of the Defensive Player of the Year award. And the first person to have it awarded or given to them was actually Sidney Moncrief, who was like a guard. And even at the time, he spoke about, you know, winning the award and saying that he was surprised that people recognize his greatness as a perimeter defender. He was a guy who was a little bit more versatile at that day and age. He could guard ones, twos, and threes, which, you know, isn't that a typical in today's game, but at the time it wasn't very usual. But even still, he recognized that when most people thought of defensive stats or defensive players, they were big men who would block shots. Kareem, guys like that. Even Ralph Sampson with the Houston Rockets and the Twin Towers and things of that sort. So you look at what Moncrief was able to do, much more a perimeter defender, and he was surprised that he won the award. And then that narrative kind of went back to the norm there, where it was just all of a sudden people started awarding the big men. And of course, you know, Jordan won it, Gary Payton won it. You've had enough perimeter players win it over the course of the award. But more than likely, you're going to want to latch on to some kind of key statistic there, whether it's blocks or steals or something like that. And I just don't think that Bam puts up those kind of numbers. He's never going to have the block shots in comparison to a guy like Gobert. He's never going to be noted for his... Look, even now, we've all seen it. We all see it regularly. People who cover or follow the team all see Bam and what he can do guarding 1 through 5. And yet you have Philadelphia fans, you have national media members saying Ben Simmons can guard 1 through 5. That Bam isn't necessarily that good of a player. And I lose my mind at thinking about that, because we've been seeing this from Bam from day one. Like, as a rookie, he was guarding guys like this. I can't recall exactly when that sequence was when he was guarding Steph Curry a couple of years ago. I want to say it was maybe his first, maybe his second season. But I remember within a 1 week stretch, he guarded LeBron James. He guarded James Harden. He guarded a lot of players, and he did a phenomenal job of shutting them down and limiting them in a way that very few players can. I think he's certainly deserving of that recognition. Now, I will add to the whole conversation that I don't know that Eric Spoelstra is ever going to do a good enough job of talking up what Bam does. Like, we've all seen it recently and this season with Simmons and Doc Rivers talking about his impact and saying that, you know, that Ben is certainly the Defensive Player of the Year. And maybe Spo will say this on occasion, but he needs to be much more, he needs to volunteer it a lot more. And maybe it's also a product of the Heat just aren't winning enough. They're not, you know, within the top 3 seeds of the Eastern Conference. They're not getting the national recognition that maybe they deserve, or probably, actually, they probably feel better flying under the radar. I think that jives best with what this team is about and how they want to produce. So I don't know if they would necessarily want that kind of attention anyway. Yeah, I think Defensive Player of the Year is absolutely just as narrative-based. I think you can point to a couple statistics, but all of it is subjective. Like, there's no way of, you know, whose criteria is different? You know, Utah-based writers or Philadelphia writers are going to look at what Simmons and Gobert do, and they're going to say, oh, this guy impacts the game in a different way. I don't know that Miami Heat writers or voters that watch Bam more frequently are going to put Bam in a higher level than, you know, either Simmons or Gobert. And I think you look at the players that are, at least that Vegas believes, are in the running for Defensive Player of the Year, and somehow the Sixers have two, Embiid and Simmons. And look, I don't think it's possible. Like, how can you have two Defensive Players of the Year? This is like last season when you had, you know, Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell being Sixth Man of the Year candidates. It's like, well, pick one. Which one's the Sixth Man? Is it neither? Is it both? I mean, you can't have it that way. It's not possible. And so it's hard to separate the criteria of team success from individual success. Like, is Ben Simmons individually a great defender? Yes. Is Embiid individually a great defender? Yes. But how can you have them both be individually great defenders and not see that they're complementary of one another or that they help each other? You know, for every mistake that Simmons makes out in the perimeter, does Embiid clean up those mistakes? And vice versa? Is it easier if Embiid's out of position and all of a sudden you have a guy like Simmons who can switch on and pick up you know, somebody that Embiid was supposed to guard? Isn't that the case there? Like, there's so much subjectivity to it that I think that any award is narrative-based to some degree. And so you also take team success into consideration. I mean, Miami just doesn't have the wins for it. Miami just hasn't had the production. They're not taking people by surprise the way they did last year. And so even for the few weeks there where, you know, Jim VP was building steam, it didn't seem like it was realistic, right? I never got that sense that Jimmy was actually going to be a candidate for the MVP award. And I don't get that sense for Bam either. Like, this might be his best shot at doing it, at least the last couple of weeks. Certainly, I think, emphasize that a lot more because we're starting to see more offensive production, which, again, strangely goes hand in hand because he's a guy who, as long now that we recognize him for his points, and all of a sudden it's just kind of like out of sight, out of mind, and this is the inverse of that, where all of a sudden we're thinking about what Bam does, and now we recognize that not only he's a really good scorer, but he's also a hell of a defender when it should probably be the other way around. So it's hard for me to think that voters are going to look at what Bam does without Miami having much more success as a team, without Spoelstra doing much more to volunteer and put Bam's name out there. And I think this isn't a knock on Spo necessarily. Like, I think he has done enough to talk up his players, and he kind of deflects, you know, any kind of mistakes that they make and things of that sort. It's rare that he'll throw a player under the bus, but he also is not going to be a guy that will volunteer players for individual awards, because to him and to most people in the Heat organization, team success trumps all of that, you know. And I don't know that he's necessarily going to talk up a guy like Bam at this point in his career. Maybe later on, if the numbers change, maybe if the priorities of the organization change, maybe if Bam starts to get to that point in a couple seasons when Jimmy's career is starting to go on that downward trajectory, and then all of a sudden Bam has to become the face, the singular face of this franchise, then you can start putting his name into MVP and Defensive Player of the Year consideration. So to me, it's still a year off. And I'd also add, to tie it in together to our MVP conversation, if Bam gets the Defensive Player of the Year award within a year or two, then you can start to see the narrative building for him to be awarded the MVP down the road. So it's interesting how it all ties together. But yes, there are absolutely narratives that are included there. It's a lot of different conversations there.
Do the Heat bring back Trevor Ariza next year?
I don't think so. I don't know what happens there regarding Trevor Ariza, but I just think, to me, you know, obviously he'll have to make a decision regarding his own personal life outside of basketball, which is the reason why he hasn't played over a year. But moreover, at this stage in his career, depending on what he does, let's say, you know, best case scenario, Miami wins a championship. Then, you know, it's kind of a 50-50 toss-up between, do I want to come back and run it back? Do I want to try and put myself through that? Or have I accomplished enough already with my number of multiple championships where I can just go ahead and walk off into the sunset and call it a day? The fact that he even came back this year after a long hiatus, I think, speaks to his love of basketball and the fact that he wants to continue to play. And certainly he's playing at a good enough level there. So it's an interesting question. I'd have to say that right now my feeling is that he probably would not be back. Like, I don't know that Miami would want him to be on this team moving forward. As good as he might be, as likely as he might be to have a couple moments throughout the rest of the regular season in the playoffs, I don't know that you necessarily want to continue to have a player of that age on this roster and to be able to have that kind of major role. Now, I don't know how you fill in somebody like Ariza. You know, somebody, you have to add somebody, because I just don't see KZ making that leap again next year. I mean, the expectations were that he was going to make that leap this year. Do you go out and try to get another guy like a Mo Harkless or somebody like that who might take over that role? It's potential. It is possible, but I don't see it right now. So if nobody else has got any questions there, again, I really do appreciate you taking the time. Hopefully you can always respond to me via Twitter. You know, you can always send me a direct message. You can always send me an email at lockedonheat@gmail.com. You all know this, hopefully. And if you haven't subscribed to the show, or if you don't follow it, make sure you please do so. And as always, you can leave a review. Let me know how I did, because I don't know if you want this moving forward. I'm doing this for you all because it seems to be something that fans like to interact on this app. And so if you want me to continue doing so, I will be happy to. And if you have any suggestions or tips for how to make it better, those are always welcome. And I mean that. I mean I know that things have changed over the last year with me taking over as a singular host of this podcast, but I always want to provide the best show possible. There are so many podcasting options. You're taking time of your day to be on this app, to be listening to this podcast, and I'm very grateful for all that, and I want to do whatever I can to make this the best experience for you all. So please feel free to write in, send an email, send a message, whatever you think is best, and thank you so much again for taking the time to be on this in this locker room episode, and thanks again. Take care.